Welcome to Out of the Question, a podcast that looks behind some common questions and uncovers the question behind the question while providing real solutions for biblical world and life view. Your host is Andrea Schwartz, a teacher and mentor and founder of the Chalcedon Teacher Training Institute.
God's laws are not suggestions, they are commandments. Thus, for any individual or society that desires to be blessed by God, following his law word is not optional. This is also true for civil government. God's law requires swift justice, and the case laws of the Bible are in place to clarify how various offenses should be dealt with. There was a system in place that's chronicled in the Old Testament where people could go and plead their case and be given refuge until the circumstances of the offense, usually a capital one, could be investigated. The Bible laid out the penalties if the person was found guilty. The prison system that is in place today is not something the Bible sanctions. Yet, prisons exist, and often they house people who have committed crimes worthy of death. In a society that doesn't follow biblical guidelines, does the church have a necessary role? Today, I have with me Dave Bush, who is the pastor at Oak Hill Presbyterian Church in Sonora, California. He also has a ministry to inmates at a prison close to where he lives. I interviewed him back in 2012 regarding his work as a volunteer chaplain for the Sheriff's Department, where his responsibilities included being at accidents or crime scenes and notifying family members of injuries or death. At the time, he also had a prison ministry. Well, I ran into him this weekend at a wedding of a mutual friend. We got to talking about his continuing work in the prisons, and I asked him if he would consider talking about the scope of his work and give us an inside look. Well, he said yes, and that's why he's here today. So thank you, Dave, for joining me.
Andrea, it is so good to be with you. Delight seeing you at the wedding, and to be here is just really a deep honor.
If prisons are not a part of God's plan for society, does it seem ironic that as a minister of the gospel, you interact with prisoners?
Well, I would say probably not ironic, but it's what we have, and we're dealing with the situation as it is. I hesitated going into the prison ministry initially. I was requested by a prisoner who wanted a prison ministry there in Jamestown. And I threw the letter in the trash bag just because I had no interest. I did not desire to go there in any way, feared it in a lot of ways. And then he wrote me a second letter and said he wanted a reformed work there in the prison. So I actually called our minister in Modesto and asked if he would consider coming up and doing this, because this just was, you know, absolutely something I did not want to do. But he did not want to do it. So little by little, we just kind of went through the steps to get in and saw something there that was just really dynamic. But as far as the irony, I can say without any hesitation what you are arguing. A prison system is unbiblical. We see examples in other nations that had a prison system, but I find that the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. And what we do to prisoners is unjust in a lot of ways, because it trains them in their evil. It adds financial burden to law-abiding citizens that is unjust. God's law would be far more just to remove evil from a society. So I see a lot of bad things in the prison ministry, where there is a kind of like a breeding ground for people becoming better criminals because they're learning how to commit crimes in a way that they can defeat, you know, law enforcement and so forth.
That's what I meant about the irony of it. Your reluctance, was it just based on, I don't want to add another thing to my schedule? Or did it have to do with this conflict of the Bible says no to this? Like, would people go into a brothel and decide that they would evangelize in a brothel?
Right. So two things that I would say there. I think there is biblical justification for being in the prison system and ministering there. Jesus in Matthew 25 is talking about the criteria that is going to be asked of those on that day, where I was naked and you did not clothe me. I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was sick and in prison and you didn't come and visit me, right? So you have that. You have Paul as an example in prison and ministering to the Praetorian Guard and so forth. So I think evangelism can take place in a prison system. My fear of going in was more of a just a personal fear. Quite frankly, I didn't know what I was getting into. Thought I'd get in there and there'd be a 300-pound man named Bubba who wanted to make me his girlfriend. And I wasn't interested in that at all. So I just had a vision of what it would be like in my mind. And getting there, reality and what was in my mind were just two radically different things.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You got a letter from this guy. I take it you didn't know this guy. He just wrote you a letter?
Correct.
Okay. You threw it away. Yeah. Obviously, the second letter now was like, well, I may want him to go away, but he's not going away. You tried to get another pastor to do it. Can you kind of recount how God let you know, Dave, you were not off the hook on this?
Yeah, because he wanted specifically a Reformed work there. And I knew there was no other Reformed work in the area. Modesto would have been the closest. So in light of this other pastor not doing that, I decided I would start with just testing the waters, seeing if I could get cleared and go in and meet these people and just see what it was like. And just, again, very unsure and nervous and lack of confidence and what this was going to look like. So really just kind of stepping out in faith and just, you know, let's just see kind of like, is God going to shut the door on this, or is this going to be something that we end up getting involved in? And we had actually had a prison ministry. When I came to this church, there was a gentleman who was running a ministry and had an associate with him, another gentleman at the church, and the two of them would go down. And when one moved out of the area, and then the other one went down to Southern California for school, and they really wanted me to take over the prison ministry. And I just said, I do not want this.
Interesting. My experience on things that are presented to me, and my first reaction is no, and it keeps coming back. After a while, you have to know that God is the one who keeps bugging you on this. And the way I describe it to people, there's this feeling in my gut. It's like, until I say yes, that feeling doesn't go away. So was that something you experienced, that I keep trying to hide from this? You were having a Jonah moment and you're supposed to go do this.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I felt a, you know, I knew there was a need there. They wanted Reformed theology. I really believe this is truth and there's nothing more precious. And so I have nowhere to go. I'm painted into a corner. There's no one else who's going to do this. So I'm just step into this. But
did you first check with your family and say, are you okay with this?
No. I checked with my elders.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, we looked at it as, do we want to step into this? And one of the elders actually got cleared with me. So the two of us got cleared at the same time.
Tell me what that involves. What does it mean, getting cleared?
Yeah, you have to go in and you make an application for being a volunteer. There's some training that the prison does. You have to go through a DOJ background check, and that takes a while. And then after you go through the test, did you pay attention to the training and get your clearance from the DOJ, they'll issue what they call a brown card, a volunteer card to get into the prison.
So when you applied, did you say, I want this kind of person, or by going as a volunteer, they announced that this pastor is going to be there. Come if you want to hear him. How do you actually get an audience in the prison?
They assigned a slot. You know, you could choose slots that were available for a ministry. So we got a slot on Sunday, a 2-hour slot. And then after a while, the men really wanted a midweek study. So we started a Christian worldview study midweek. So we're actually out there 2 days a week now.
So Sunday, and what's the other day?
On Thursdays right now.
And it's not compulsory that people have to show up to your study. How do they usually end up in the study?
They get what they call ducats. So they sign up for that particular class. And it's really sad because the religious services, they don't get any time off or credit for time off of their sentence. If they go to any other education, they get time off, but not for the religious services. If you look objectively at the recidivism rate of those that are in religious services, the recidivism rate is like 1/10 of the normal population.
So what would be some of the other classes or meetings that they could go to that would get time off from their sentence?
They could go to AA classes, NA classes, just different psychology. They'll have different classes that will help them from a secular view. Different organizations come in and offer things. Getting a degree through self-study or correspondence courses, things like that. Anything they do to try to educate themselves according to the prison system that they believe would help to rehabilitate them.
So it's actually kind of interesting. You're not going to get people who are just checking a box and I'll sit here for however long. If they're not going to get their sentences reduced, then I think it's a fair bet to say the people who show up want to be there.
Yes, for the most part. You get some that don't, but the dynamic that I think was most arresting to me, you know, you go in there and I preach Sunday, every Sunday here, and you preach the word and I leave the pulpit like I'm tired. I have labored in the word and I go out there and I'm tired, but there's such a hunger for God's word because you don't have to convince these people on the level you do for those who've never committed crimes or been incarcerated, that they are guilty. They know that they are sinners. They're in prison for a reason. It's not a hard sell to teach them in the courts of God they're guilty. So they are really hungering to hear the doctrines of grace. And they're like little chicks that just want to be fed, you know, mouths open. They'll take the word or what they've heard that day, and they'll go to their cells and they'll read books and they've got all week to think about things, and they'll come back with some really good questions. But you get just so invigorated there because you really feel the word is penetrating on a level that it just doesn't seem to hit people outside.
Right. You literally have a captive audience,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But more than that, I appreciate the fact when you said these people know they're sinners, they've committed crimes. Well, the truth is all have sinned. Yeah. And how many people really appreciate that unbelief is a sin? So they go around thinking they're not a criminal, they're not a criminal.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, if you're denying the most obvious truth there is, you're in a state of crime, whether or not the civil government is the one sanctioned to deal with it.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine there are other Christian ministries at this prison.
Yes.
Is it a competition? Do you find that other ministries are going like, why are you here? We already have this covered.
There is a Muslim group and there's a bit of a resistance from the staff that's overseeing that group that wants to kind of make sure that Christians don't get a foothold. So we, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a resistance there. But the volunteer groups that come in, I think for the most part, they're friendly. they see you're a volunteer, there's a commonality, so we're kind of all laboring together. It's pretty sad because you really do see that the cults are pretty active in this. And there's some broad evangelical churches that are there, charismatic, so you kind of see the whole gamut. Catholic Church has representatives that go out there, so we're a reformed work.
So, is there some threshold of attendance? Like, if you come in and every week you get two people, will the prison say, you know what, this isn't working? You need to have a minimum of so many. Did they work like that?
No, as long as you're willing to come out, the time is yours, the slot is yours. If you're willing to come out, it's not like you need a minimum amount. On the Christian worldview, we've had at the height of things probably 20 in attendance. Right now, it's very low because we got a different time slot that was originally requested. And then the number of guys got involved in jobs and things, and some people have gotten released. So, yesterday we had three people. And yeah, it gets a little bit discouraging for me driving out there, and you get two or three people that will show up, and they all talk, oh, I want to be here, I'll be here Thursday, I'll be here, and then they're not there. And football comes on or baseball, and sometimes that tends to be a distraction for a number of them.
Do you stay in touch with people that have been in your class who are released?
Yes, some. One gentleman, he got out and was ordained as a deacon and continues to serve in that function. He got married and is a vital part of Christian ministry ever since. The guy who hauled me out to the Jamestown wanted the service, the guy first writing. He ended up getting out, and he was a man who was a lifer, and he ended up at three strikes. And by God's grace, he had just shown himself to be such an exemplary character that the whole prison staff actually fought on his behalf to let him out. And he ended up attending Joel Beakey's church and got a job, became management in a job, and really just super neat to see people's lives are truly given over to Christ. His whole admission when he was there is if he had known Christ, he would not be doing the things that he was doing and would never have been there in the first place. The restraint against sin that prevents that, boy, as we move further and further away from Christianity in our culture and we start seeing the increase of crime, it's a direct cause and effect.
So much of the biblical sanctions, when stonings would take place, obviously the person who was stoned to death could not repeat the offense because he wasn't alive. But the Bible always gives that actual additional to purge the evil from among you. So
That's right.
if crime, if the capital offenses, for example, that the Bible says should be met with execution, if that was followed, there might be a lot of, like you said, that this man said, he probably wouldn't have done some of the things he had done because not only would the culture be such that wouldn't sanction it and go, yeah, that's great, but he may well have witnessed things like that. So is your Jamestown prison a maximum, a minimum security prison? I know there are different levels of prisons.
Yeah, they have all the levels out there except for the lowest level, and they we're on the sensitive needs yard, which would be gang members that want to get out of a gang and are over there or have committed the kinds of crimes that would make them a target in certain yards because of the prison system has its own standard of ethics. Commit certain kinds of crimes and you don't deserve to live.
And
So,
those would be like the sexual crimes.
yeah, particularly those crimes on youth. On your last question, an illustration,
Okay.
two things, I guess. The stoning, for instance, I used to wonder if stoning was required as the means of execution or would say a guillotine and a quick death serve the purpose? But I do think that there's some wisdom in the public, slow, miserable stoning event that people who see that would say, there's no way I would want to die that way. And there's some real wisdom there. People in general, and even trying to deal with sins on a secular level, trying to be merciful to the sinner. The Bible also says you shall not show mercy in these kinds of cases because you end up perverting justice by showing mercy to those who deserve to die. And then crimes happen to society, whether repeat offenders or just the looseness, crime propagates. And so the story I wanted to share with you was I was bringing this out in one of my sermons, and one of the prisoners came up to me afterwards and said, "You know, Dave, if what you're saying is true, do you know that half of the people in this room would be dead?" And I said, "Yes, we'll call him Fred. Yes, Fred, that is probably true." And before I could start to say, there would have been a deterrent that may have helped prevent a lot of this. He said, No. He says, "I agree with you, Pastor Dave." He says, "We get away with murder in here." That was his response. And I was like, wow, that's true.
And it's the sort of thing where, when you were quoting Jesus saying, "When I was in prison," I think people like to have the idea of the person who was unjustly prisoned, you know, like Paul and Peter and John, you know, they were professing their faith and they got thrown in prison. But that's not the people you see on a regular basis. Is part of, as you get to know the people who come to your meetings, do you want to find out why they're there? Do they want to tell you why they're there?
The prison in the training recommends that you don't ask what the crimes were,
Okay.
that you just come and you minister. Some guys will share. There's a lot of them that just are going to continue to say, "We're innocent, innocent, innocent." Okay. And they're fighting it and they're going through the courts and appealing their cases and that sort of stuff. But there are some who just, I'm here because of XYZ, and they'll share that information. The other thing about Paul's ministry, he's ministering to the Praetorian Guard, right? The Philippian jailer, the staff there. And I think one of the really rich tie-ins is 1 Timothy 2, the famous God desires all men to be saved. In the context there, he's saying to pray for all kinds of men, right? You know, kings and those who are in high places, so that we may lead a tranquil life. Well, he's writing to Timothy from prison, having that impact on the Praetorian Guard, getting inroads into Caesar's household. And now Caesar bows the knee to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, you know, the kind of persecutions that Christians are undergoing now. We could live a quiet, peaceful life if our civil magistrates were actually submitted to King Jesus. And it's that prison ministry that is an inroad for him on that. I think that's just really neat.
It's true. Years ago, I had a medical event, and people, when they hear about it, "I'm so sorry that happened to you." And I'm like, well, I'm not. Had I not been in the hospital, look at all the people I would not have encountered. So God has a purpose where he places you. And of course, we all want nice outcomes. How many people come back and actually minister in prisons after they're released, or does the system discourage that?
You have to go through a process. There is a gentleman who actually was joining us when I would go out on Sundays. He would come along. He goes to a different church. He's from a broad evangelical Baptist church in the area. He was a kind of like a Hell's Angel kind of a guy, motorcycles. I don't know if he was in the Hell's Angels particularly, but it was a very, very aggressive motorcycle gang that he was running with, drugs and, you know, the whole thing, leading a very, very bad life. Got arrested, did time in jail, became a believer, got out. His life is cleaned up. And now he goes in, and he right now has the longest running volunteer program at the prison in Jamestown. The longest
Wow.
volunteer. He's been over 30 years now in that prison. I think we're at about 17.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask you, because when we talked, it was 2012 that I interviewed you last. Have you noticed the makeup of the prisons are different sorts of offenses that got people there? Are people harder? Is it just pretty much the same as when you started?
Well, you get different people, and the numbers are not so big that you really can see anything. They're just different sort of personalities and so forth. I guess I don't notice anything dramatic.
So it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, I see a lot of guys with tattoos all over their faces and arms and everything, and whole bodies tattooed up. But the prison offers free tattoo removal.
Oh,
And
really?
yeah, they come out once a week or once every 2 weeks. They come out and they will offer, you can sign up for slots and they'll do tattoo removal. And there are a number of the guys in our group that are going back through that face tattoo removal. Very, very painful.
I'm glad you brought this up. A number of months ago, I did a podcast on tattoos. What's the reason that number one, the prison offers it for free? Do these tattoos usually signify a loyalty or a participation in something?
We're on the sensitive needs yard. So a lot of these guys are people who are coming out of the gangs. And so if they have particular gang insignia on them, it marks them out as part of that gang that they don't want to be a part of anymore. So you have that group that is doing that. The men in our group are really saying that I don't believe tattooing my face honors God. I want a body that reflects the cleansing that God has done in my life, and I want my body to reflect that. That kind of thinking is what's going on in the men in our group.
And I wonder, I mean, there's a, when we did the podcast, that a lot of young women are getting themselves tattooed. And aside from the fact that whatever seems like a good idea when you're 18 may not seem like a good idea when you're 40, it's like being marked. And I wonder how much of that, quite frankly, has demonic connotations, that like you're now being identified with something. So it's interesting to hear that these men want to change the identification.
Yeah, very much so.
When you're preaching, and I'm guessing after a while you pretty much know who you're talking to, or you can guess who you're talking to, do you ever feel the temptation to hold back because this is going to be a hard thing for some of these people to hear?
Gosh, that's such a great question. I preach at our church, and then I will do the same sermons out there. Although sometimes the program's called off, yard shut down or something. So I'm behind a few weeks. So they'll get something that is a few weeks old. But when I'm preparing that, I really don't often have the prison ministry in mind when I preach. I feel like I'm looking at the text so close, and I'm just trying to understand what does this text teach? And how can I communicate what the text teaches? And I honestly don't really try to think about who I'm preaching this to. I really fear getting into the pulpit, knowing I'm under a stricter judgment, and mishandling God's word is something I'm not interested in. So I am trying to, the best of my knowledge, tell the people what this text means and make some applications about it. I don't fear the men there. I say what I believe this text to be saying. And sometimes I have to say, now that may be hard for you to hear, but this is what your God has communicated to you. So there are some times about that. But I will say this as well, Andrea, that I feel there's such a better unction out at the prison than I have even in my own pulpit here.
No, that was actually going to be my next question. It sounds like, for a variety of reasons, these people recognize their need. They may feel like, I don't think I could go any lower than I've already come because look where I am. Look what my future is.
Yeah.
And so I think that answers my initial question. God has people in various places. You know, they didn't fall off his calendar. They're where he wants them to be.
Yeah. In fact, when we were at the wedding, between the ceremony and the reception, that break we had, I got a call from a prisoner who has transferred from the Jamestown prison to another prison and has been gone for probably 4 or 5 years now. And he called me, it looks like he's going to get out in about a year, but he is just over and over and over saying how thankful he was for hearing Christ in our ministry, how his life had changed, and that everything is different. Everything is just, it's hard, but he doesn't want to mess this up. He wants to know, he's trying right now to find a church that will commit to allowing him to go there. He's trying to pave the way that, look, I'm getting out and you can anticipate me coming to your church when I get out because I'll be in that area, but I want to be under Reformed teaching and I want a pastor who's going to minister to me. So he was really trying to work that avenue out. It was just really exciting.
So that brings me to a very sensitive question, only in as much as we can discuss the failure of civil government to follow God's law. But quite frankly, if the people demanded God's law to be followed, then the people in civil government would reflect that. So we don't really have a society that's all for everybody getting reformed or everybody coming to, because people like their sins. And as long as you don't acknowledge them, that's where antinomianism is so bad, is that, well, some things we'll just call them infractions, mistakes, shortcomings. The Bible calls them sins. So as one of your students mentioned to you, you look around this room, Pastor Dave, and if God's law was being followed, half of us wouldn't be here. But God's law isn't being followed, and some of these people are now being released. And let's go right into the realm of sex offenders, because it sounds like they're among the people that you minister to.
Right.
So someone, according to God's law, should be dead, but they're not. The civil government says, you did your time. You're now released. They're sort of in a demilitarized zone. They live in this zone, whether or not they can get a job because you were past incarcerated. They want to show up at a church and you have all the people with young children concerned. Quite frankly, I'm sure a lot of people just want them to go away. But where do they go? They actually have received the Holy Spirit. Is anybody addressing the people who come out and now have to, this is really not unlike women who've had abortions. They committed murder. They shouldn't be alive, but they are alive. A lot of them come to faith and they work very diligently to promote the idea of don't kill your child. But do you think that the church in general even knows how to deal with such people?
In the main, no. But I would say if you have somebody who, let's say, is a pedophile, goes in, does his time, gets out, he's not going to go to church if he doesn't know Christ. If they come to Christ in prison and want to go to a church, okay, we have to be careful, wise, but also trusting and live by faith. We have the tools to deal with something if it gets out of control. Doug Wilson had a situation up at his church, right? How does a pastor know what's going to happen in the future? You don't know that, but at the same time, you think of the things that Paul was forgiven of. If you just say, hey, look, we don't minister to anybody who's been in prison, Paul could never enter a church. So we have to be careful and just recognize that the human heart is what it is, but God is in the business of changing hearts. I wish we were more consistent. I pray for that. I'm training men in this body and I guess women through the general preaching of the word and so forth. But our men's study, we've worked through theonomy and Christian ethics and apologetics, and we've gone through institutes and so forth. And we're working through eschatology right now. And some exciting things about victory and the kingship of Christ and consistency in the law. And it takes a little bit of an investment, but these guys are getting it. I mean, they're coming on board and it's so exciting. We're in the minority, right?
Right.
You and I are a rare breed. But once you mine this vein of gold, it's hard to get off that vein, right? And go find some common dirt to sift through. This is precious, precious stuff. We had a really rich discussion last night, but God's law is our only safe ground. Until our state becomes more consistent with that, we will continue to have the kinds of difficulties that both church and state have to deal with because we're not dealing with crime and punishment the way God has ordained it to be.
Right. The one thing that I'm pretty sure some people might question what you said is that there are plenty of people who are quote unquote discipled into general evangelicalism. And if they have not truly repented and turned from things, big churches are a great place to go if you still want to proceed the way you did before. And so I don't think those churches have a real way to address it if they haven't established God's law as the precedent. So, for someone who should be dead, but because of how things are today, is not dead, there should be a basic humility that says, I understand why people don't want to be around me. I get that. And I would hope that there would be more people who were ready to minister to these folks because, on the one hand, the government says they did their time, they made up for their crime. Well, the Bible doesn't say you can make up for rape, make up for murder, and stuff like that. So we're in an interesting time, but like you said, if you don't go back to God's law, literally you don't have a prayer as to how to resolve this.
The other thing I would say is that I think just the way we've been talking today, I would want to qualify that everyone who commits, say, a capital crime, adultery, incest, it might be murder, the qualifier is after a properly adjudicated court case, that God does allow people to get away with sins. David murdered. Paul murdered. They were not held responsible because there was not a properly adjudicated court case. So I think that is a right. And I think that, Rush and Bonson and others have been very good on this, is recognizing that the extreme cases are going to be the ones that will be the deterrent. There may be people that get away with things that are worthy of death, but just a few extreme cases of subversive kind of activity are really going to be the only ones you would ever have to go full course, right? So we're all worthy of God's judgment. Every one of us is a sinner, as you had said at the beginning of this. But even on these kinds of cases, there are plenty of people who are worthy of capital punishment that, by God's grace, can evade that because he doesn't have the two witnesses that are willing to bring it to a court case.
A couple of times that I have been in a jury pool, things that have been promoted, like, well, are you willing to take the testimony of the police officer because the victim doesn't want to testify? And I had to say, no, I'm sorry. This guy, I don't know what he did or if he did it or not, but he's entitled to be confronted by the person who's accusing him. And two times I was excused from the jury because the judge didn't like that. So not everybody who is in prison is necessarily guilty in terms of God's law, and that God's requirements have been met. The whole idea of plea bargaining. I don't see plea bargaining in scripture. Do you?
No. You have witnesses that are so convinced that you've committed the crime and are willing to go to trial, knowing that if they can't make the case, then they would suffer the punishment that would have fallen upon the one they were accusing. That's going to be a deterrent for all of these frivolous lawsuits. There's some wisdom in that. So then the amount of courts that you need to have, the amount of cases that are tried are going to be much less. But if you bring the penal sanctions to bear, you're going to then have a deterrent factor that will be what keeps the sin from propagating. Now, that's something that we're just immune to in our own culture. It's just awful. I mentioned the tender mercies of the
The
wicked.
wicked are cruel, yes. Do you ever have people, guards, administrators interested in coming to your classes? Do you ever have people say, could you do a class for us?
No, typically they don't get involved. There's a real immunity, it seems, to having anything to do with the prisoners. It's kind of like an us versus them, the guards versus the inmates. There's really a derogatory sort of just talking down, convict, get out of the way, convict, do this, convict. There are a couple of Christian guards and stuff, and you can really tell them they're different, but most of them, it's kind of state. They just walk with the slowest walk possible to unlock the chapel for you. They aren't interested in being in there with inmates. If particularly if it's one person and you got 20 or 30 or 40 inmates at church, they're not interested in being in that room unless they got to come in and look for somebody
I
or
see.
make some kind of an announcement. But there was one occasion where a woman guard that one of the inmates had been friends with her and they were Christians, and he had recommended that she come and talk to me. And we had a wonderful conversation, but it was obvious that she was very, very charismatic and she was premillennial, dispensational, all of this stuff that's coming. This is telling us that Jesus is coming soon. And I'm trying to tell her, well, there's another way to look at this.
Right.
And let's ratchet it back a little bit. Let's look at a few things. And it was a whole new paradigm, and it was just too much for one
One
conversation,
encounter, yeah.
really. Yeah.
So is the prison in Jamestown a men's prison?
Yes.
Are there female guards in a men's prison?
Yes.
Does that create problems?
Yes. In fact, I think it may be a year ago, roughly, there was a prisoner. There's like a laser system apparently that will lock the doors. And somehow, if you put like a deck of cards, they could prevent their door from being locked. And a prisoner kept his cell, got it to where it wouldn't lock, got out, knew the shift change, knocked on a lower door that they would allow the guard to go in, knocked with a particular knock, walked up, locked the lower door. Went up into a room, raped this woman repeatedly, beat her. She was the girlfriend of another guard. And this was a huge thing. They had the whole prison shut down for weeks after this. But she was up there for well over 3 hours with this inmate and completely unable to defend herself. She had a gun, but was unable to even use the gun. Because of overwhelming force. Total folly.
This is the example of you go down the road of doing a solution other than God says. I have a friend whose wife is a nurse, and she's at a prison in the Merced area, I think, Modesto. And they were dealing with the issues of transgender inmates and the risk women are being put into. So there's a real reason to have empathy for people who end up in the prison system. For whatever infractions, and like you mentioned, the three strikes rule. The three strikes rule is in a biblical paradigm. So we just have to basically say, respond to God's call, and you did. So there are people who'll hear this and say, I would like to do something here. I don't think you would necessarily recommend that everybody who's moved by what you said should go into prison ministry necessarily. But I remember a couple of times, and we're talking like 30, 40 years ago. I started writing to prisoners, and I learned early on a woman should not be writing to a male prisoner. And after a while, there were requests being made. So it's not something you do to feel good about yourself. Would you say you really need to be called by God for this and know God's word yourself before you go in, rather than you can tell all your friends, oh, I write to a prisoner or I do prison ministry?
Yeah, I would not recommend that anybody write to prisoners that they do not know unless they are willing to go through volunteer training, because the way prisoners think and their ability to scam and take advantage of little bits of information and how they can exploit people is something that we who love God and want to be obedient don't think in those ways, and we're vulnerable, and you have no idea where your blind spots are. The training was very, very good. You have got to watch out what you say, what you wear, what sort of things you will give as favors. They'll ask you a little favor. Once you give them a favor, then they know they can blackmail you because you broke prison rules, and now they'd start driving that. Give me one more favor. I knew a guard that got fired because he had brought in something, just something casual. I think it was a family picture that this guy had wanted or something. But he brought in something into the prison because this prisoner had been a friend with him. He thought he could trust him. And eventually it ended up coming out that this guard had brought things in for this prisoner, and he lost his job over that.
We're told to be as shrewd as serpents and as innocent as doves. And don't assume that everybody in the administration of a prison system doesn't know what they're talking about. It sounds like you think that the volunteer training has a lot of merit if you're going to be effective and stay alive.
Yes.
How could people get in touch with you if they wanted to interact more on this subject?
Yeah, email bush0961@gmail.com.
So Bush.
0961@gmail.com.
Okay, very good. Well, it was providential that we ran into each other at this wedding. I was thinking that maybe I would see you, but I wasn't
Yeah,
sure.
yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that you took the time to spend with us today.
Well, I absolutely love you, Andrea. It was so sweet to talk to you. So good to see you.
Out of the question podcast at gmail.com is how you reach us. And we look forward to talking with you next time.
Thanks for listening to Out of the Question. For more information on this and other topics, please visit calcedon.edu.